Reading to you from Genesis chapter 45, beginning at verse 4. Genesis chapter 45, beginning with verse 4. So Joseph said to his brothers, "Come near to me, please." And they came near. And he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord over all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen. You shall be near me, you and your children, your children's children, your flocks, your herds, and all that you have.'" On August the 20th, 1893, Brother J.W. McGarvey preached a sermon after which I've patterned this one on Joseph and the providence of God. Obviously, I wasn't there to take notes that night when he preached the sermon originally. It has been preserved, though, down through the years in more than one book of his sermons and has been preached countless times since then by other preachers. I myself have used this lesson many times. I've preached it here at Redland Road before. Hopefully, though, with every preaching, it's a little bit different. But the theme is the same. The story is the story of God's providence. And as we begin this study tonight, we should begin with three questions. The first of these three questions is, why does the story of Joseph take up so much space in the book of Genesis? It is second in personal accounts only to the number of verses that are dedicated to the story of Abraham. Only Joseph is next to Abraham in brevity of the account that tells about him. Why do you suppose that is? I'm sure there could be many reasons, but I know for sure that the story of Joseph's life and his slavery in Egypt and all that grew out of that is a necessary explanation for how something came about that God had prophesied more than 200 years before Joseph's time. We read about God's prophecy to Abraham, God's promise to Abraham regarding something that would take place. In Genesis chapter 15, you remember on that occasion of God speaking to Abraham, he caused a deep sleep to come over Abraham and he spoke to him in a dream. And one of the things that God promised Abraham back there in Genesis chapter 15 was that his descendants would be fugitives or slaves in a foreign land, and they would serve there for 400 years. The story of Joseph is the detailed story of how God's people wound up in Egypt, that foreign land that God was referring to. Incidentally, the foreign land whose identity, so far as we know, Abraham never even knew. Abraham lived his life and died in the land of Canaan. Isaac, his son, lived and died basically in the land of Canaan. Jacob, his son, though he spent 40 years in a place called Paddan Aram, spent the majority of his life in Canaan, until near the end of his life, he, along with 68, 67 other members, male members of his family, moved to Egypt at the invitation of Joseph that we've just read here in Genesis chapter 45. The next chapter, chapter 46, tells us that there were 66 persons in all of Jacob's male descendants who came from Canaan to Egypt. 66 plus Jacob, that's 67. Plus Joseph, 68. Plus Joseph's two sons, the text says, who were born to him in Egypt. That makes 70 male Israelites, descendants of Jacob, who started a new life in the land of Egypt. Another question that probably would come to your mind if you know anything at all about the story of Joseph would be this question. Why, after Joseph was made ruler, second only to Pharaoh in Egypt, why did he not go back home, a journey of about 200 miles, and visit his father? The third question that comes to mind about this is this one. Why on earth did God choose 10 obviously wicked men, Joseph's brothers, to become the heads of 10 of the tribes of Israel? Now, we'll answer those two questions there, Lord willing, after we talk about this story a little bit. But let's go back to the idea that now 70 of the male Israelites, along with their wives and children, female children, have now begun to live. They have migrated to Egypt to live in that foreign land. How did they come to live in Egypt? Well, the answer to that question would be in the fact that Joseph was made prime minister of Egypt, and as a result of that, he occupied a position from which he was free to bring his family into Egypt, because you remember there was a famine in the land, and even the land of Canaan was subject to that famine. And so it was a good thing for Joseph to bring his family to Egypt to begin a new life where food was available. But wait a minute. You say Joseph was prime minister of Egypt? How in the world did that come about? Well, you may recall it came about as a result of Joseph predicting the 7 years of famine that would come on the heels of 7 years of plenty, and Joseph's advice to Pharaoh that he needed to make sure the land of Egypt during the 7 years of plenty laid up good stores to be prepared to feed all of their people and those around them during the 7 years of famine that would come. How did Joseph get into the position of advising Pharaoh? Well, the answer to that is seen in the fact that Joseph interpreted a couple of dreams that Pharaoh had that nobody in the kingdom could interpret. The magicians, the dream interpreters, no one was able to tell Pharaoh the meaning of these dreams that he had about seven fat cows that came up out of the river, and seven skinny cows came up out of the river, and the skinny cows ate the fat cows, and the skinny cows weren't any fatter after they ate the fat cows. Well, the question then comes up, well, why was Joseph in a position to be an interpreter of Pharaoh's dream there? Joseph, a foreigner, an Israelite, there in Egypt. interpreting a dream for the king of Egypt? Well, you see, the answer to that as to how that came about was the fact that Joseph had interpreted the dream of the baker and the butler out of Pharaoh's court while they were in prison. Joseph correctly interpreted the dream of the butler the baker that he was going to die, and he was executed shortly thereafter. The butler, though, Joseph interpreted his dream that he had had to mean that he was going to be delivered out of prison. He was going to be restored back to his former position. And in fact, Joseph made the plea with that man that once he got back to his former position as the butler in the house of Pharaoh, please remember me. Wait a minute. Why would Joseph be asking this prisoner to remember him when he got back to his old job? Well, the answer to that is the fact that Joseph was also a prisoner. He was in the prison, though he was in charge of all of the prisoners, because of his exemplary behavior, the fact that God had blessed him with favor in the eyes of those that he had to deal with. And so when the butler and the baker, or the baker and the butler, if you want to keep it in chronological order, had their dreams, and Joseph was there in prison with them and told them what their dreams meant. But wait a minute, wait. What was Joseph doing in prison to begin with? Well, you see, Joseph was in prison because he had been accused of molesting the wife of the captain of Pharaoh's bodyguards, Mr. Potiphar. Now, if you remember that story at all, you might wonder, as I have often thought about, why in the world didn't Potiphar just kill Joseph when his wife accused Joseph of molesting her, rather than have him thrown into prison? Well, if you read the story carefully, you might come away with the conclusion that Mr. Potiphar, it seems, probably had as much confidence in what Joseph was saying, in fact, maybe even more so than in what his wife was saying, and so instead of killing Joseph, he had him put into prison. Another question. What in the world did Joseph do that caused Mrs. Potiphar to accuse him of molesting her? Well, it seems that Joseph was serving as a servant in the household of Potiphar. In fact, he had served so well in that position. You remember that he was elevated to the position of steward over all that Potiphar had. In fact, Joseph would say, everything that your husband has, with the exception of you, is under my control. He's put everything in my hands. You see, Mrs. Potiphar kind of took a liking to Joseph in the wrong kind of way. And the Bible tells the story how that one day in the house, she tried to entice him. And when Joseph, fearing God and wanting to obey God, turned and fled from her, she reached out and grabbed hold of his coat. And the Bible says that he ran out of that garment and left it in her hand. And when her husband came home, she, having been spurned by this prospective paramour, she told her husband that Joseph had, you remember this, that Joseph had assaulted her. And of course, then Joseph was put in prison. Well, how did Joseph wind up as the servant in Potiphar's house? Well, Mr. Potiphar bought him in the slave market. He bought him as a slave in the slave market in Egypt for the purpose of using him as a servant in his house. Well, now, wait a minute. Why was Joseph in the slave market to begin with to be in a position to be bought by another man to serve as a slave, a servant in his house. Well, the Midianites had sold Joseph to the slave market there in Egypt. The Midianites? You might ask, how do the Midianites figure into this thing? Where do they come from? Well, you see, it was the Midianites to whom Joseph's brothers had sold him back there in the land of Canaan. When Joseph's brothers were tending the sheep several miles from home, and Joseph's father, their father, hadn't heard from them in a while, and so he sent Joseph to check on them. And they said, when they saw him coming, you remember what they said? Here comes that dreamer. And so they decided, between the time they saw Joseph coming and the time he got to where they were, they decided they were going to kill him. And they were going to take that coat of his, that horrid coat of many colors. They were going to dip it in animal blood and give it to their father and let him conclude that Joseph had been killed by a wild animal. But Joseph's oldest brother, Reuben, with a streak of conscience that evidently the others didn't have, managed to persuade the other brothers that it would be best to throw him into the pit there. They were in an area where there were many tar pits. And so they agreed with Reuben and threw him into the pit. And it appears that most of them planned to go back and kill him later. But Reuben had in mind that he would release him. But then this band of Midianite, or the ESV says Ishmaelite, merchants came through on their way to Egypt. And somebody said, let's sell him. Let's don't kill him, let's sell him to the Midianites. And they did. And so the Midianites bought Joseph. They threw him on the back of a camel. Can you imagine what was going through Joseph's mind? With every step of that camel as he was pointed toward Egypt, Joseph was looking over his shoulder, and surely by now he said, okay, guys, good joke. You got me. Come on now. Let's don't take this too far. This has gone far enough. You can stop all of this now. But it never happened, did it? They took him on to Egypt. You might say, well, now, wait a minute. You mentioned the brothers' hatred for their brother Joseph. Why? What's going on there? Why did they hate him so badly? Why did they call him the dreamer? Well, the Bible tells how that when Joseph was young, he had dreams. In fact, he had a couple of dreams that really got under the skin of his brothers. And one dream was about sheaves of grain as they were harvesting the grain and binding them together in sheaves. And Joseph's dream was that his sheave, sheaf, I guess would be the proper way to say it, his was there, and all of the other brothers' sheaves bowed down and worshiped his sheaf of grain. He also had another dream, and after telling the first one to his brothers, you'd think that he would have learned and left well enough alone, but no, he had another dream, and in this other dream, the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down before him, Joseph. And he told that dream to his father and his brothers. And therefore they hated him. In fact, the Bible says they could not speak peaceably to him. They hated him so bad. Now, it didn't help matters any at all that Joseph was his father's favorite son. The Bible tells us that, and it tells us about that coat of many colors. I can't imagine that being some kind of fantastic looking garment that meant status and approval, but that's exactly what it was. And his father had that coat made, that robe, the tunic, as the ESV says, and had it woven of many different colors and gave it to Joseph because Joseph was his favorite son. And so they took Joseph, threw him in the pit, sold him to the Midianites, took his coat of many colors, tore it, dipped it in animal blood, took it back to their father and presented it to him and allowed him to draw his own conclusion. Now, in reverse order, we've just gone through the entire process of how the descendants of Abraham ended up in Egypt. And hopefully you can see that every single point along the way, every single part of this story really forms a link in the chain of God's providence. You may also have noticed the fact that even though this is the providential working of God to bring about the fulfillment of something that God had predicted 200 years before Joseph lived, in all of these points and all of these links on the chain, and we could have pointed out more as we went through, but in all of these links, every single one of them except for two were natural, normal events, things of everyday human life. A father's favoritism toward a son, the jealousy and hatred on the part of the other siblings toward that son, the plotting together of the group against an individual, the passing through there of the Midianite merchants who were headed toward Egypt, thus the opportunity to sell Joseph instead of killing him. There's not a single miraculous thing about any of those. They're just normal human events. As I said, though, there are two links that we find miraculous attachment to. One was when Joseph was permitted by God to be able to understand and interpret and reveal the meaning of the dreams of the butler and the baker. And secondly, when God permitted Joseph to be able to know and understand and interpret the meaning of Pharaoh's dream. Other than that, every other part of this story is just simply the unfolding of human events. And there are actually people today who would say, well, boy, that's an interesting string of coincidences, isn't it? You and I know, though, that it was the providence of God. It was the unfolding of the story that God had in mind, and God allowed the circumstances to work in very much the same way that God allows circumstances to work today, as we talked about this morning. And so Joseph became prime minister of Egypt. Now you remember the story how that in the land of Canaan they were about to starve to death, and so Joseph's father told his other sons, with the exception of the one who had been born recently, Benjamin, his youngest son, the only one who was full brother to Joseph. The others were his half-brothers, actually. But his father sent the 10 brothers to Egypt to buy food. Remember that? Joseph knew who they were. Now, they didn't recognize Joseph because no doubt they had long since forgotten Joseph, at least with any indication that he possibly was still alive. They went back. Joseph manipulated matters such as having their money put back in their grain sacks when they got home, and their father sending them back and then coming home again and coming back, and Joseph telling them that they had to come next time and bring their youngest brother. and even deciding to keep Simeon as a hostage in order to ensure that they would really bring Benjamin back the next time they came. It was because Joseph dearly wanted to see his little brother. Oh, before we look at the very conclusion, remember that second question, why did Joseph not go back home and see his father after he became prime minister? In Genesis chapter 41, we find Joseph being made prime minister. He was busy working and storing up the grain in abundance, preparing for the 7 years of famine. And in verse 50 of Genesis chapter 41, we get a little bit of insight to the answer to that question, why didn't Joseph go back home and see his father? Before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore them to him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. For, he said, God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. The name of the second he called Ephraim. For God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. You got to remember that Joseph's brothers knew they didn't kill Joseph. Joseph's father was allowed to believe that Joseph was indeed dead and had been killed by a wild animal. And so therefore Joseph's father never bothered to try to find out where Joseph was, because Joseph's father believed that Joseph was dead. And Joseph never bothered to try to find out any word from his father, because he believed that his father knew what had happened to him. And he named his two sons in tribute to the fact that God had helped him to forget his family. Isn't that sad? That's what it says there. For God has made me forget all my hardship and my father's house. So that's the answer to why Joseph didn't ever go back barely 200 miles to check on his father after he had risen to a position of power and wealth and freedom. He didn't believe anybody in his father's house cared for him. Now, the story ends, you remember, with Joseph revealing himself to his brothers after they had come back and brought Benjamin with them. Joseph caused them to be sent away with his special cup in Benjamin's grain sack. And then sent his steward to catch up with them and say, "Hey, something's gone missing. We believe you guys took it. Come back. You got to go back to the master's house." And so they were dragged back to Joseph's house, and of course they protested their innocence, you remember, and finally they began to open their sacks, and there was the missing cup in the sack of Benjamin. Obviously he'd been framed, but they didn't know it. Joseph knew it. Benjamin knew it. Reuben spoke for the entire group of brothers when he said, Don't keep Benjamin as your slave as punishment for what he's done. Keep me and let him go back to our Father. I think maybe there's part of the answer to that last question. Why in the world did God choose 10 men who did something so despicable as to sell their very brother as a slave to foreigners? God didn't choose those wicked men. He chose the men who had come through this experience and had grown in their appreciation for their family, most of all for their father and their youngest brother. Isn't that the way it is with us? God doesn't save us. God doesn't choose us until we submit to Him. Until our love and appreciation for the Father, and you could say for the family, grows to the extent that we're willing to be slaves ourselves in order to please the Father. Because isn't that what obeying the gospel of Jesus Christ is all about? Submitting ourselves as His servants. What a great story. 70 Israelites began there in Egypt. Joseph died. The Bible closes the book of Genesis and opens the book of Exodus with the information that the Israelites grew and multiplied and became a great number of people so that the Egyptians were afraid of them. And there arose a Pharaoh who knew not Joseph, and then began the slavery that God's people served until the deliverer, Moses, was raised up to bring them back to the land of Canaan. Are you serving the Father? Are you serving yourself? Do you have the interest of God's family higher than your own selfishness? If you're subject to our Lord's invitation in any way, we invite you to respond as we stand together and sing this song.